Hello, and welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. We're happy to have you, and we're happy to have our guest today, Leah Jorgensen. Leah and I went to high school together a million years ago, a million miles away, and it's so exciting to see what she's become. We now are both living in Portland, Oregon, and doing things in the health and food world. So let me tell you more about Leah. Leah Jorgensen first became interested in pursuing a career in nutrition after she was diagnosed with celiac disease in 2007. Her journey started when she began sharing her learnings about celiac disease and gluten-free living with friends and family. Her experiences with healing through natural medicine, acupuncture, bodywork, and nutrition therapy had such a profound impact on her quality of life, it became clear that she wanted to share her knowledge and experience to help make a difference in the quality of lives of others. Leah completed a 2-year holistic nutrition certificate program at the Wellspring School for Healing Arts, the only school in the Pacific Northwest to offer studies in both clinical Western nutrition coupled with traditional Chinese medicine. Leah believes that food is medicine. She loves to cook and share food, or break bread, as she puts it, with friends and family. In addition to offering nutrition counseling, Leah makes her own wine at Leah Jorgensen Cellars, focused on what she calls a Loire, Oregon style, inspired by France's Loire Valley, grown and made in Oregon. And she plans to start making a line of traditional Chinese medicinal wines. She also coaches high school girls varsity lacrosse in the Portland Metro League. She's a freelance writer and hopes to one day synthesize years of wisdom and inspiration for a holistic nutrition cookbook series. So welcome, Leah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I love how you say you're talking about what you're going to do in the future. It's like so powerful to just put it out there. Like, I'm going to be writing these nutrition books, these cookbooks. Watch out, world. So let's see here. I said a little bit on your intro about how you first kind of had to take a pretty strong nutritional healing path yourself with the celiac disease. Is that when you first became interested in nutrition, or was it prior to that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I grew up in a home where my mother was a registered dietitian, and she had worked in hospitals and in public health. And our household was always about whole foods cooking, and my mom, also being of Italian heritage, just loved to cook, and my father actually loved to cook too. So food was really an integral part of our family, and the sharing of food and dinner time and all meal times, actually. So from a very young age, I always had some of my happiest memories around the table, and it was always around really nutritious whole foods cooking that my parents provided. So, you know, we had the right start, and really my mom's philosophy was, when we were growing up, that when we go to grocery stores, she always shopped the outside aisles. You know, it was like, that's where the real food was. And so, you know, I learned that early on. But for me, truly, I became mindful about my own needs nutritionally when I was diagnosed with celiac in 2007. And I didn't realize that some of the choices that I had been making along the way were generic good health decisions as far as what I would select to eat, but then there were things that I was maybe missing out on because I just didn't have an awareness of nutrition from a holistic standpoint. So over the years, since 2007, I've become more and more mindful about what I eat, not just in terms of what not to eat, like don't eat gluten because I have celiac, but why am I eating things, and when am I hungry, and why am I hungry? And I was asking myself big questions, and over time I realized there's something here, and there's something I want to do with this. So that kind of was where it really manifested for me.
Yeah, but people are curious about your celiac diagnosis. You know, it's kind of something we hear more about nowadays. Can you tell us, first of all, what is it, and how did you find out that you had it?
Sure. Yeah, celiac disease is an autoimmune disease, And basically, people are genetically predisposed for it. And what that means is a certain segment of the population does not have or does not produce the enzyme that is required to break down the protein of gluten that is found in foods such as wheat and other grains. There's no cure for celiac disease. There's a myriad of symptoms that people can experience, and ultimately, long-term effects of celiac are really the harmful, when it gets really harmful. The short-term symptoms are uncomfortable, but if someone doesn't make a change with a gluten-free diet, which is the only way to deal with celiac disease currently, if they don't make changes in their diet, then over time they become, you know, susceptible to other potential dangerous diseases, including certain cancers. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's really wise to get diagnosed and to figure out, you know, if you are having a handful of these symptoms or even just maybe for whatever reason have an instinctive feeling that something's not working, it's really important to go to a healthcare provider and try to do them. It's almost like solving a mystery in many ways with celiac. It's a really difficult disease to diagnose, and I think that's why for years it went undiagnosed for so many.
Okay, so you said the people who have celiac, they don't have the enzymes to break down gluten, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so where does the autoimmune part come in? Is it the body is attacking self where those enzymes need to be made, or if just attacking the gut cells when we consume gluten?
So when someone who has celiac disease is eating foods that contain gluten and the food is going through the natural course of digestion, by the time the gluten breaks down and gets to, or not quite breaks down, but gets towards the small intestine is where all nutrients are absorbed and then broken down and distributed through the body, through the bloodstream and whatnot. So by the time the gluten is in the small intestine, over time there's small hairs, they look like little hairs in the small intestine that line, they're along the lining, and they're called villi. And those literally lay down flat over time from damage from the immune system is attacking, because it's reacting to this gluten protein that shouldn't, in its sort of defense mechanism, shouldn't be there. It's being identified as a toxin because there's not the enzyme there to break down the protein in the gluten. So over time, as the immune system is reacting to the lack of enzyme there to break down that protein of gluten, those villi in the small intestine lay flat. They don't become destroyed. They just become altered so that they cannot capture the nutrients from your food. So two things are happening. You're having an autoimmune response where your immune system is attacking the small intestine. And then on the other hand, you're basically becoming malnourished or having malabsorption. You're not able to pick up the nutrient content from your food.
Okay, yeah, thanks for explaining that a little further. So I'm curious, when you got diagnosed, were you happy to have a diagnosis finally, or sad that you can't have gluten, or sort of a mix of both? And what changed for you when you found out?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My father was diagnosed first when he was around the age of 60, and so I was around the age of 30 at the time. And when he was diagnosed, it was kind of a surprise, and he just found out from a routine colonoscopy. He only had really like one or two of the symptoms, so it was really a surprise. And his doctor said that, you know, his children or anyone next of kin should definitely get tested for it. I was in denial and did not want to. I don't even know if I was in denial. I just didn't want to find out. And the interesting thing is, intuitively, I think I knew I had it because I had so many of the symptoms. But I loved food, and I was in the wine industry, and I traveled a lot, and I was eating at these amazing restaurants, and I just wasn't at the time willing to make a change, which is so crazy because I didn't feel well half the time. I kind of dragged my feet until I finally sought, healthcare assistance in finding out whether or not I had celiac. And in fact, I was living in Portland at the time, and it's interesting. I went to two different allergists and another regular doctor, and all three of them said I didn't need to get checked, that I didn't have it. And I was angry at that point because I was like, well, I know I have the symptoms. My father has it, and everyone's saying, you know, and this is back in 2005 or six, everyone's saying that if you have a family member, a next of kin who has celiac disease, you need to get tested for it. I knew these things, and my intuition, thank goodness, drove me further because I was like, these doctors are not listening to me. They're not even listening. They did a scratch test on me, the allergists, and like, of course they didn't. Of course it was inconclusive. So it wasn't until I moved up to Seattle and I was living there for a year. I was working at St. Michelle Wine Estates actually at the time, and I was having such bad reactions, and I was getting my first round of migraines, and I had never had migraines my whole life, but the kind of migraines where I was seeing aura, I was getting sick, I had to just go in a dark room and close the door. I mean, it was actually terrifying, and that was the moment when I was like, enough's enough, I've got to resolve this, and my cousin led me to Bastyr. So I went to Bastyr, and I sat down with, it was at their teaching facility, so I was with a naturopath and three students, and they sat with me for like 2 hours, and all they did was listen, and that in itself made me want to cry, because I felt like for the first time in my whole life of being seen in a medical situation that I was being heard.
Yeah, right on. And, you know, there's a blood test, right? Is that conclusive enough, or does it have to be kind of a gut sampling, so to speak, for a conclusive diagnosis?
I think the jury's out. I think that I'm not a doctor, so I don't study, you know, blood tests for this kind of diagnosis. But just from what I've read about diagnosing celiac disease, it runs the gamut, because what they're looking at when they're doing the blood test, from what I understand, is like nutrient deficiency, and that will tell one thing, but that's not necessarily, I don't think, a clear indication of celiac. It just might mean someone is not absorbing their nutrients. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why someone's blood work could show nutrient deficiencies. On the flip side, the bowel biopsy, they say, is the most conclusive because they can actually see if the villi are down, and, you know, that's a 100% sign of a celiac sprue, autoimmune. So, I mean, I think if you really are on the fence and you're not getting the answers from blood work or doctors, and you still feel like, gosh, this is something I really feel like I need further testing, then I would imagine the bowel biopsy is the best route to go. You just need to find a doctor or healthcare provider who will help you get that to that path. The interesting thing about when I was at Bastyr, I mean, they were just like, you have every single symptom. I mean, it was so crystal clear to them. I had the rash with it too, the dermatitis herpetiformis, which you can only get that specific rash if you have celiac disease. So it was textbook for them when I was in the office.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just remembering too, there's a lab called Cyrex Labs that tests like many of the different gluten components, and then it can test cross reactivity. So just wanted to share that with our listeners too, if you want to look into a pretty in-depth blood test, you can ask your practitioner about Cyrex Labs. So yeah, getting a little off track, but I just kind of wanted to get a few of those things clear for listeners.
Yeah, it's important information to get out there, because I'm coming from the nutrition side, not the diagnosing side. But yeah, it's important for people to know what resources are out there if they feel they need to get tested.
Yeah, some people might be listening and wondering. So you found out, and after kind of avoiding it, but also having the intuition that it was probably true. And so what happened once you found out?
So I got this wonderful folder of information from the students and the naturopath at Bastyr, and including recommendations for supplements, including, you know, an omega-3 based fish oil supplement. And I believe definitely they were pushing me to get on a probiotic, and And so I kind of started journaling, and there was just a lot of really great feedback that I got from that experience. And then, you know, obviously I had to do the elimination diet, and that part was really tricky. I mean, I went home for the first time and started just throwing out things in my kitchen and in my pantry, and it was emotional. I was crying because I was like, not because I was necessarily attached to the food per se, but I was just overwhelmed by the enormity of what I knew was about to embark on and this new journey in my life. That it wasn't a bad thing, wasn't a good thing. It was just emotional for me. I was just realizing that everything from my life, the way I knew it, is now about to change. And that's the reality of when you have celiac disease. It's, yes, you have this discomfort and sort of dealing with this disease, but once you're diagnosed and once you make changes, you really are on a path to a completely different life. And while those are going to be amazing things that will happen on that journey, things that are going to empower you and improve your health and make you feel great and improve your mental well-being, because celiac does affect all kinds of functions of the body, including mental health. That's a big one, and brain fog and able to focus. Those were huge issues for me and still are. They continue to be huge issues for me. But there's also the I don't want to say downside, but the part of letting go of things. Like, you know, I grew up with an Italian mom who made pasta by hand and had this amazing food that is, I'm never going to eat those foods again. It's just never going to happen unless there's some crazy enzymatic therapy that's going to happen down the road, you know, maybe 10 years from now, or 20 years or whatever. Where we are today, the way it looks today, I will never be able to enjoy foods that were the comfort foods of my childhood, many of them. So that's a lot to take on.
Yeah, for sure. I remember the first time a naturopath talked to me about gluten, and I definitely remember having an emotional reaction. And it's why for many of my clients, you know, I sort of, not exactly trick them. I'm on the air, so I better. But I say, you know, just think about doing it temporarily. You know, just try it for a week. Just try it for 3 weeks, because forever sounds so daunting. And the reality is, when you have celiac, it is forever, which must have been a lot to take in for you. I guess we'll talk about the positive story. You started to become more mindful about eating. Tell us a bit about the start of that.
Exactly. I had to close the window. I was hearing a lawnmower outside. I apologize. The interesting thing was, as I was progressing on the journey, because it is a journey, and I'm grateful that I recognized it to be a journey at the time. I recognized that this is powerful stuff. This is a change. I've got to be positive about this. As I mentioned, my father was diagnosed first, so I wasn't in the dark. You know, I had enough knowledge. Maybe that's why it was hard, because back then the options were certainly better than what they were 20 years ago. But, you know, there were still limitations on what was available for food choices. And again, looking at the fact that I love to eat out, I love food and I love dining, and it's part of my industry as a food and wine professional. I was very nervous, and there was I would say the first part of going out and making the changes was a little daunting and scary, and I had a fear when I go out to eat. And I think eventually I started to not just look at gluten, but there were some other buzzwords that my naturopath kind of told me to look for when reading labels, and I was avoiding casein for a little bit. Actually, when I was first diagnosed, I was eliminating a little bit of dairy as well. I think dairy as well, because they basically wanted me to heal the gut and not eat foods that could compromise the process of healing the gut, because obviously the damage from eating gluten and having all these reactions and symptoms over time, there was some work that needed to be done for my body to heal. So we eliminated a few things to make it easy for my digestive system to heal and to really get the most of my food. So that's when the mindfulness started. I really, I kept journals, and I was writing about foods that made me feel good and foods that were still kind of dragging me down. And I was just being hyper aware of things. And I wasn't interested in judging food as good or bad, like I can't eat this or I won't eat that or this is sugar, I'm not going to do that. Because when once you're diagnosed with something like celiac, it's overwhelming enough to have to take one major thing out of your diet. And gluten is like, as you know, is in so many things. So I wanted to like not overkill and overwhelm myself. And so just being mindful about that was kind of huge. And I think for me was what helped me get through the first, you know, several months of altering my diet. So as soon as I, you know, kind of relaxed on things that, like sugar and other things, and dairy, because I was able to bring back dairy and there were a couple other things that were eliminated. But I was able to basically restore my diet to almost normal of what I was eating before the diagnosis, just without the gluten. And once I was there, I was really aware of what made me feel good, what didn't make me feel good. And I found, like, even though there's a lot of people who are advocates of raw food diets, I found that the more raw foods I ate, like salads and things, I would have a little bit more pain and a little bit more sluggishness. And you know, of course, after going through a nutrition program, I realized that for my biochemistry, I was asking a lot of my digestive system to break down all of those raw foods. I do better with cooked food, me personally. I do better when food is cooked. So that's a major thing to recognize about yourself, like what works best for you. And that's when I recognized the power of mindful eating and being just really aware of what works for you and your biochemistry versus what a textbook's telling you you should eat and how you should eat.
Yeah, I think what you said was so powerful. You would eat something and then just write about how you felt. Like, that's so simple, and it's so not done, you know. I think there's so many people in denial, like, oh, well, yeah, I have headaches, but I can eat whatever I want. It's like, no, your body does give you feedback, and just starting to listen to that feedback and yourself is so important. Like, and you also mentioned, you know, for you, cooked foods are easier than raw foods, and everyone's different. And yeah, just having that personal observation, I think that's just a great tip. So we're going to talk a little bit more about mindful eating, but just let's put this gluten issue to bed a bit before we move on to that. Gluten is a popular topic right now.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people are eliminating it. You know, you see gluten-free on menus more. How do you feel about all that?
Well, you know, I look at it, that's an interesting question. You know, I look at it two ways. And I really, maybe even more than two ways, I have different feelings about it. The increase in awareness about gluten-free food options is wonderful, especially for those who really get sick from gluten, and really especially people with celiac disease. I mean, that's, to me, you know, I don't want to hierarchy people's, disorders or anything like that. But I'm just saying that I think that the primary, for me, the primary benefit of more awareness of gluten-free is more safety and more, I guess, confidence for people who have diseases like celiac. But on the other hand, I don't support self-diagnosing of any kind, and I really do feel like people should speak with a trusted healthcare professional if they are dealing with any kind of pain or discomfort, or any other symptoms that they're not sure about, and they should keep looking for that right professional until they find a route that helps them to feel better. And I really feel strongly about that. I think it's a lot of people will start doing these elimination diets, and they're not trained to know what to look for, and they might read its information on the internet, and they might try to resolve and have no real grasp on what they should be looking for. And it's really important, I think critical, to work with someone. The pain and symptoms they might be experiencing might have nothing to do with, you know, food at all. It might have something else. You just don't know. And so, I don't know. I think if, on the flip side, if you are going to a healthcare provider, you know, you are trying things that aren't working and you're like, well, I think I'm going to just eliminate food, because you're getting frustrated maybe because you're not getting answers. I think that might be an opportunity to look at, well, who else can I go to? Is there another kind of healthcare provider that I'm not thinking about who might be really attuned to helping me resolve this? So I can't state that enough. I just think that, you know, making gluten-free a diet in the same vein as like paleo or Atkins or South Beach or whatever, the raw diet, like to me that it gets a little dangerous in my professional opinion. I feel like it's being mindful about food first is about really knowing, being aware and really knowing what you're taking on in terms of your nutrition. And I often feel like that needs some kind of guidance, and that's either through a naturopath, an acupuncturist, a nutritionist, or a combination, or, you know, your regular medical doctor, maybe in tandem with any of those other kinds of more holistic providers as well. That's just my humble opinion. But I don't know. I think in general, having more gluten-free options out there is great, but I also don't believe that it is a – or should be treated as a weight loss program. In general, studies have shown that fad diets, they fail to produce lasting results. So someone might cut out, let's say they think, well, I'm going to cut out gluten and I'm going to lose, that's my weight loss program. If they follow that, just like they follow a lot of trendy weight loss diets, they might lose the weight temporarily, but studies show within 7 to 9 months they put the weight back on and will, you know, and ultimately not feel their best. So, again, I think that mindful eating is at the root of a healthy relationship with food. It addresses every dietary issue from weight loss, weight gain, you know, managing sugars or insulin, you know, gluten in general, looking at gluten from a more mindful standpoint than just looking at it as a trend that might give you a result for like weight loss. I think that's a little bit naive, and if weight loss is the ultimate goal, again, I think someone should definitely go talk to a healthcare provider to get a real system that's going to help them, you know, live their healthiest life, whether that includes losing weight, gaining weight, whatever they need to do to be in that balanced, you know, that place of homeostasis, of balance and wellness.
Yeah, I think that's good advice to get advice, which, you know, if you're going to take gluten out of your diet or maybe gluten and some other things, and that's a staple in your diet, then you are left with a question, well, what do I eat? And you might just replace it with other processed foods, or you might, it's funny you mentioned the raw food. I had a client recently who gave up some inflammatory foods, and she was just ending up to be eating like nothing but salad because she couldn't think of anything else, and then she was bloated from all the salad, and then she got frustrated and was cheating on, you know, the inflammatory foods again. And I said, well, of course, you know, you got to get some cookbooks. You know, I gave her some suggestions. Like you have to have a plan about what you will eat when you take those things out. So yeah, I think it's good to have a coach, and we'll talk more about that. So so for mindful eating, you know, we talked about the journaling. Mm-hmm. What are some other techniques for mindful eating?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, there's a handful of ways to really approach eating with a little bit more awareness, really. And at the root of it, I think the reason why there is a need for mindful eating in our Western culture is because many of us are just so inundated with life, right? We're so busy that we're on the go. We're managing, you know, 3 jobs, a family, whatever it is to keep our lives as full and busy as they are, that one of the most important things that we fail to give our full attention to is what we eat, when we eat, and how we eat. Many of us eat on the go. Many of us don't have time to cook. Many of us don't like to cook. You know, there's a number of reasons that will potentially keep people from being more introspective about when they eat, where they eat, why they eat, and so on. But really, mindfulness is the act of paying full, non-judgmental attention to any given experience. And when we tie that into food, you know, it's deliberately paying attention. It's slowing down. It's being fully aware of what's happening both inside, you know, in your body, your heart, and your mind, and then outside of yourself and in your environment. That could be where your food's grown, where it's coming from. So there's a lot to think about when it comes to both the practice of eating and then what we're eating. But again, the key to it is mindfulness is awareness without judgment and criticism. And I repeat the, you know, without judgment, without criticism, because that is the key to it. Often I think people want to go right to this categorizing food of good or bad. And we do this with everything in life. I mean, we like to put things into, you know, opposing sides, really. So, you know, we'll look at something and say, I can't eat this, this has a carb. I can't eat this, this has a fat. I can't eat this, this has sugar. I can't eat this, this has, you know, gluten or whatever. So we're going to automatically judge our food. And what happens over time is I think people start to really get almost an anxiety about what they're eating. And it's almost a disorder in itself because people are so busy guilting and shaming for what they might have eaten when they were trying not to eat those foods that there's this whole sort of cycle. It's almost a vicious cycle when it comes to some people with their relationship with food. And what happens is we disconnect from the very basic right of what we are supposed to have with food, and that's enjoyment. We're supposed to enjoy our food. It's supposed to be nourishing. It's supposed to taste good, and it's supposed to make us feel good. And that's the key to eating. So there's all kinds of ways that we can slow down. There's all kinds of exercises that we can do to be mindful. And actually, I mean, I do go over this in detail in some of the workshops that I offer at the wellness boutique where I practice, where I keep my office hours. But really, things like having joy, you know, just trying to be very joyful when you're eating. You know, it's not good to be eating when you're angry. You shouldn't sit at the table with people who are when you're mad at someone. You know, all those things, that anger will affect your digestion. There's proof that eating while upset can actually upset your digestive process. So relaxing is really important when you sit down to eat. Just making the time to sit down and eat is important. Chewing. So many people put their food in their mouth and swallow it, you know. But the stomach doesn't have any teeth, right? So well-chewed food is really, really important. It is the beginning of the digestive process. Actually, the saliva, when you look at food, that's the beginning of the digestive process. The next step is then chewing. But that's the best way to extract nutrients, too. The most efficient way is to just chew your food. Stop eating when you're full. Oftentimes, you know, you have a plate of food that comes out and you feel obligated to finish your plate. I know when I was a little kid, you know, we had to finish our food before we were allowed to leave the table. And you know, I appreciate that in some ways because, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're working with different people, with children versus adults, there's different issues about how much they eat and why they eat. But in general, I'm speaking specifically to adults at this point, stop before you're full, right before you're full. Also, in Chinese medicine, the spleen is the organ system that is really the heart of, for lack of a better word, the heart, but the center of our digestion. And so you shouldn't flood the spleen. What that means is you shouldn't drink too many fluids with a meal. A little bit of warm fluid is okay. But too much, like iced tea, ice water, ice cold drinks will actually put out the digestive fires and they will make the digestive system have to work harder to process your food. So warm fluid is okay. Also, tea is suggested. A little bit of tea, a cup of tea is sufficient. But it's better to consume fluids between meals. And then the other thing is just eating your meals regularly. Like if you can set schedules, the digestive system loves schedule. So if you can set your schedule of when you eat, that's being mindful. That's paying attention to your body's hunger. And, you know, if you tend to need a snack in the mid-morning and then the afternoon, because that's when your body tends to need that extra boost, you need to pay attention to those things and feed your body what your body needs. So those are just some things to sort of slow down and be aware of when you are approaching mealtime and just nourishing yourself.
Yeah, you know, I feel like a lot of this is kind of stress reduction in a way, too, because we're slowing down and we're being aware. I just heard another podcast recently, and he was talking about the gluten phenomena and pointing out that in, like, the 1950s, like, a third of our diet was gluten, and yet mm-hmm. there seemed to be, like, less of an issue, and his theory was that was our increased stress, you know, which is hard on the gut. It doesn't, you know, produce substances the gut needs. So, yeah, it's interesting. You know, sometimes perhaps just the way we eat is more important than what we eat, because we can nourish our gut through slowing down and chewing and eating in a calm space. And I think that's the part sometimes we want to sweep under the rug. We don't want to do those things. We just want to eat the good food.
Oh, we forget, you know?
Yeah. Oh, we forget. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's really healthy advice. Tell us more about how you teach mindful eating.
Well, I am currently offering workshops, and I like to keep them relatively small, like under 10 people at a time, because, you know, it's intimate work when you're sitting in a group talking about, you know, how to slow down and how to be mindful about your food. I just did one over the Valentine weekend on Saturday, and I call it Mindful Eating, How to Lovingly Nourish Yourself. And it's really interesting the sort of emotions that come up when you bring tools out to show people how they can make simple changes, because I think some people have been wired to think, I have to do all this work, and I have to cut out this, and I have to do that, and they're looking at sort of these big picture ideas that are, I mean, you could just go on Facebook and see all these, like, nutrition things that pop up that are, some of them are from reliable sources, some of them aren't, but my point is that there's all this information that people will come into a workshop and have all this information kind of in the back of their head, and they feel pretty confident that they know everything they need to know. And at the root of it, the most basic things about how to just sit down and slow down and chew your food and create ritual, like, on how to make things pleasant so your body can just be in a very balanced state. You know the whole fight or flight concept, that if we are in stress and we're in that fight or flight mode, that's a really unhealthy place for our bodies to be when we are trying to process food. So, you know, we really want to be calm and present and happy and, you know, aware of what we're eating and not eating and being aware of mood and, you know, our. When I offer a workshop, I go through different little techniques of, like, how to assess your hunger in the moment. So one of the things I did, which I got from a wonderful book that I've been reading on mindful eating, is this exercise where you take a small piece of food, and in the case of the Valentine workshop, I had dried cherries. And so each person got a dried cherry, and we went through this whole process of them describing what it looked like and what it smelled like and going through this whole sensory evaluation and then putting it in their mouth and breaking it down and evaluating the food from three different perspectives based on taste, but then based on, like, experience and based on hunger. And at the end of it, when we went through all these questions, I'm asking all these questions as they're going through this, at the end of it, they're like, wow, like, I never sat and thought about my food so much while I was eating it. I was like, yeah, it's kind of amazing, isn't it, when you slow down and think about what you're eating. And I was like, at the end of this, I asked, you know, is this something you want to reach out for and have another one? Like, how do you feel in that moment? Are you still hungry? Like, it was really interesting to see how people were were thinking about how they felt in that moment versus, like, you know, if you're home on the sofa, you have a bag of chips on your lap, you might just mindlessly keep putting hand in bag, chip in hand, chip in mouth, you know what I mean, and just go through the whole bag before you know it, not even thinking about it. So the workshop really, I like to bring in little tools, like little exercises like that, and a lot of journaling, like where I'll ask questions where people sit down and contemplate things. And so we'll get through some of the basics, the tenets of how to eat mindfully, but we'll also have some experiential kind of fun exercises where people can stop and think about their own personal experiences of how they, what their relationship is with food. Because mindful eating isn't just about being present and aware, but there's also the part about relationship with food. And if you don't have a great relationship with food, how can you get to one where you do have a good relationship with food? And so these workshops really get people thinking about, A, where they are in the present moment, and then where they want to be. And then hopefully, if they have work to do, I can help them as in a client relationship to reach their goals of how to get to a healthy relationship with food.
So you also offer one-on-one nutritional counseling in addition to the workshops, is that correct?
Correct. So I keep office hours at the Ethereal Wellness Boutique in Northeast Portland on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And then I offer, I'm going to try to set a regular schedule of either weekly or biweekly workshops where people can sign up at any point if they're interested in doing the workshop. Because the workshop's kind of fun. It does sort of give you a nice basis. It's like the precipice. It's like standing there recognizing, like, this is the basis of what I need to do before I approach any kind of nutritional guidance at this point or changes. I need to be on this precipice of recognizing I have to be mindful about my about food and nourishment, and I also need to improve my relationship with food. So there's two facets, but they need to be on that precipice before they can really move forward and have positive changes, lasting changes, in a nutrition consultation kind of format.
Yeah, that makes sense. Or anything in life, let's try to be mindful before we dive into this pool. So that's great.
Exactly.
Tell us your website and how people can find you.
Yeah, so my website is strongasoaknutrition.com. I also have a Facebook page, which includes the holistic piece of it. So it's, the Facebook page is Strong as Oak Holistic Nutrition. It was just a little too wordy for the URL for the website. So the website's just strongasoaknutrition.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And we'll have those links on the show notes as usual. What else? Is there anything we're forgetting or that we need to sum up, Leah?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to come and chat about, about nutrition and gluten and celiac and mindful eating and really promoting healthy relationship with food. It's really, I'm finding that that's the niche for me. That's really what I'm, there's a lot of things I like to work on it as far as nutrition and helping people out, but I really love the premise of mindful eating and healthy relationship with food. And in fact, I'm going to continue my studies and do a program through Mark David's school, the Institute of the Psychology of Eating, because it's just powerful. It's really powerful when you can get information in front of people that is really about how we think and feel about food and getting to the crux of our issues, because before we can have desired results come out, we really need to come back inward and look for our innate wisdom. We all have natural wisdom when it comes around to nourishing ourselves, but we just sort of get off track. And so I want to be that compass, help people really build or rebuild that relationship with food.
Yeah, I can tell you're super passionate about it, which is just really sweet. So really great. It's funny,
thank
I'm listening
so
to you. You're welcome. Yeah, my brain is still trying to wrap around. Like, I've barely seen you in 20 years. I'm like still trying to like put together these two pieces, like this, you know, this young woman I remember from high school and just what you've become now, and you're so well-rounded. So Hopefully my brain will wrap itself around that.
Oh, sweet. Wow. Well, likewise, I mean, I follow you quite a bit, and it's funny. I mean, I remember being in our GT and AP classes and the love of knowledge even back then, you know what I mean, and how it's sort of manifested into what we're doing. I love that we're kind of on the same plane with our intentions. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool we both ended up here doing some similar work. So we'll keep supporting each other and really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening. Appreciate your time. And the easiest way to stay in touch is to subscribe on your Android phone or on your iPhone or in your iTunes. You can also rate us in iTunes. We appreciate your ratings and comments. It helps other people find us. And we'd love for you to tune in next week. We always just have a variety of topics on women's health, from food to hormones to whatever else, you know, I think that you would like to hear about. And part of how I know that is you reaching out to me and telling me what you'd like to learn more about. So feel free to reach out. My website is bridgetdanner.com. You can contact me there as well. Okay, until next week, thank you again, Leah, and thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.